The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome back, everyone, to Vox Markets. My name is Paul Hill, and I'm delighted this morning to have with me Chris Mills, the UK's equivalent of Warren Buffett with regard to small cap investing, and also CEO and founder of Harwood Capital. Morning, Chris.
Good morning. How are you?
Yeah, very good. I was having a look at the company's website over the weekend, and the returns of the flagship funds have frankly been outstanding, particularly sort of over the last 10 years, generating compound average returns of sort of 12 to 17% per annum, compared to the sort of FTSE All Share, which has just been sort of less than 3%. Can you just quickly walk us through what you sort of like look for in stocks, and what's the sort of the magic formula, if there is a magic formula for the alpha that your investment trust have delivered?
Well, actually, if you look at North Atlantic Smaller Companies Trust, which I started managing in 1982, the NAV has gone from 32p to £42 approximately today.
Wow.
So what do we look for? Basically, we look for companies which have got good market shares, good cash flow, and are trading at what we consider to be significant discounts to the private market value of the business. And then we then work on a strategy to see if we can eliminate that discount. And that can often mean that we take an activist approach to investments. We put either ourselves or operational advisors or people who we know well onto boards. And that has served us very well over the last few years.
And what sort of like upside do you look for in terms of that margin of safety, that return, and over what time scales?
Well, we're definitely not day traders. We take long-term positions. And very often we can hold a company for, you know, 3, 4, 5 years. But then equally, we would expect over that period of time to, if we've got our analysis right, make, 100% return over that period.
Okay.
An example of something we've just been buying is Tribal Group. Tribal Group has no debt, market cap of about £100 million, about £8 million in cash. Analyst forecasts for this year are 10 to 12 million of EBITDA, but this isn't a normal year. Normalized EBITDA was expected to be 16 million, and the business basically does SaaS systems for universities, and one of the reasons the business is a bit down this year, it also does marking exams. Mm. So what does that mean? We think the SaaS business is certainly worth 12, 13 times, perhaps 14 times EBITDA, which gives you sort of 160 million. The other business a bit less, and we think the share price could easily double over the next 3 years.
Does it have the cash it's
generating.
Does it also have a pension liability, or is that clean?
I think it's clean. Yes, I'm pretty sure it's clean.
Okay.
And I mean, before this lockdown, the shares were trading at 80, 90p. Yeah. And they're now 51 today, and no one cares.
Yes. I found that very much in my own portfolio as well.
That's the sort of thing we're looking for. Companies where nobody cares anymore. The large institutions after Woodford are looking for liquidity. They can't get it, so the price goes down, and then hopefully we're sitting there at the opportune time because we've got strong cash reserves. And we're not interested in catching falling knives, though. That's a different story.
Okay, just on that, actually, how do you actually distinguish between, I know it's impossible to, so I won't hold you to it, but how do you distinguish between something which is undervalued and a value trap?
Oh, there's lots of value traps, but the key to making sure it isn't a value trap is to have the activist approach.
Mm. And what do you
actually
mean?
If you just sat back and did nothing,
yeah,
this is quite dangerous.
And what do you mean in terms of activism? What does that actually mean at the coalface?
Well, I mean, what it means at the coalface is if you look at our 12 largest holdings, let's say in Oryx, there is somebody who sits on the board who is either very close to us or is us.
And so effectively what you do is that you direct the board.
With one holding.
So effectively what you do is that you've got a sort of like a, you've seen success, you know how to achieve success, you go in there with a thesis over 3 to 5 years of hopefully doubling or more your money, and then the going on the board ensures that that strategy or something similar to that strategy is then played out to crystallise those returns, that hidden unlocking of value.
And look, in some cases it can be that, you know, the market realises it's just a fundamentally good business, it gets a bit bigger, it gets a few people's more radar screens, and, you know, the stock price goes up and we go.
Mm. Good.
It's, you know, the companies aren't always taken over.
Yeah. And do you have a sort of like a concentrated portfolio versus a more diversified portfolio? Is that sort of like you've got sort of high conviction and high probability investments rather than spreading the net that wide?
Yes, it is concentrated. And, I mean, some of the big holdings are, you know, very big.
Yeah.
You know, if we look at North Atlantic, and indeed at Oryx, I mean, the EKF holding now is, you know, close to, you know, 8% of the fund.
Yes.
But if you look at the cost base of these things, it's, you know, it's because the stock's up four to five times.
Yeah, I'm kicking myself on EKF because I I saw you bought in and went on the board about 5 years ago. And my father actually invested in EKF and he'd at an earlier time, and it came down, and I think it was in mid-teens or something. And I was sort of umming and ahhing about whether to invest or not. And it was probably just a bit too expensive for me at the time, but I should have done, and alongside yourself. And I think it's made it sort of like all in all with the spin out of Renalytics with the EKF holding, I think it's probably would have delivered a 5 to 6 times return. So, it was healthcare diagnostics seems to be a very good feature of these sort of portfolios of Harwood Capital, something that is, you've got a lot of expertise in that.
Yes, and I mean, the portfolios will always have life sciences companies. And I want to emphasize that's life sciences companies, not drug development companies. Drug development companies are inherently risky and in the majority fail. So yeah. What we're looking for is, you know, real businesses with real cash flow. And in fact, both Naskid and Oryx have a shareholding in a company called Source Bioscience, which is going to be the next Harwood IPO, which is coming out in September.
And that's we'll watch for that then. Is that going on AIM, is it?
Hasn't been decided yet.
Oh, okay. Well, that was another one I missed, unfortunately.
Well, no, because it hasn't arrived yet. The IPO will be in September.
Yeah, when you took it out, as in like as 5 or 6 years ago, I've been umming and ahhing about it. I mean, you know, that's the problem with me, I think, to a certain extent, is making sure you sort of nail your flag to the colours and get on board. But even so. Also, what I, in terms of the structure of the funds, the flagship funds, the Oryx and the North Atlantic, Smaller Atlantic, It's an investment trust and therefore sort of closed ended compared to the sort of the more Neil Woodford type of open ended. And do you feel that's absolutely essential for the small cap because of the illiquidity side, and therefore you never become a sort of like a forced seller?
It's absolutely essential. It would be a total disaster if these funds were open because, you know, you get investors who start panicking, which then forces you to sell your more liquid holdings. Where in fact, when markets are collapsing, that's exactly the time you want to do precisely the opposite and start committing your cash resources. But of course, nobody wants to invest in those circumstances. So it's been one of the great strengths. We went into the March period with good cash balances in both funds, and we're able to pick up what we think some outstanding bargains. And one example, which has already worked, a little company called Urban Exposure, which we paid 29p for. Since that time, the former finance director of J.O. Hambro Capital Management, which I founded, has become their chairman. They basically announced they're breaking their company up. The chief executive is gone, and they stated the breakup value is somewhere between 70 and 80 something p. Wow. So that was done rather quickly, shall we say.
And that's another sort of feature, is that I think from the expertise that you've got it throughout the whole group and yourself, obviously, is that you sort of like have had tried and tested ways of generating these returns, whether it's through life sciences, whether it's through, you know, sort of the tribal sides or recurring revenue streams, or also just realizing assets, seeing assets. Because I did notice you made, or have made, an extremely very good profit on Aegean, which was a similar sort of distressed situation about 3 years ago. I think it's now gone from sort of 25p at a bottom to £1.80 or something. So, but it's got assets, it's got value. And I did notice you put quite a bit, not you personally, but the funds have put quite a bit of money into Stobart as well, which is the owner of Southend Airport just recently, with, I think it's got a biomass energy business on. And I guess you see this value there as well in the long term to crystallize it.
Yeah, that one has been our most disappointing investment of the last 2 years. What we saw in it when we made the investment was a very good biomass business, which, by the way, is still significantly profitable, and an airport where there was going to be greater demand for their capacity, and if they could have built it up to sort of 5 million passengers, and they were already at 2 million passengers, that had the potential to more than double the share price. But of course, demand for airports has a demand for everything to do with travel at the moment. It's fallen off a cliff. So that one's slightly in the hospital ward at the moment.
Yeah. I did notice it's actually won the UK's Best Airport Award for the last 6 years or something like that. So it's very popular, I think, because it's one of London's fourth airport or something. One thing I did look at it, because I've looked at it slightly myself, it was sort of like whether it could actually allow single aisle jets in there, you know, the workhorses for the low cost carriers, the sort of the Airbus 320s and the Boeing 737s, rather than just the wide body, because, you know, you could then take the visitors up from 2 million to, I think, the management teams at Warren and, I can't remember the...
It's Warren is the chief executive. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
The objective is to get it to 5 million. Yeah. Enough, I'm actually on a conference call with him this afternoon.
So okay, well, if you find out, if you ask him about the single versus the wide, that'll be very helpful. I guess just sort of like, you know, top level wise, I mean, I found certainly from small cap investing, one of the sort of the keys, and I think you've been touching on it, is controlling your emotions, because there's a lot of volatility associated with sort of small caps. It can go up and down like the wind in terms of on very little volume and very little, you know, liquidity. How do you actually, or any sort of like advice would you give to sort of like normal sort of investors just to be able to control their emotions and stay disciplined?
Well, one of the things I would certainly advise smaller investors is not to get too influenced by chat rooms. Some of the total rubbish I've read in chat rooms about companies, which I know what's going on in them,
yep,
just defeats me. In fact, it's a sort of funny story. We actually had sort of a hate email saying, please sell this stock immediately because we're fed up with you just trading out as it goes up. The second we get rid of you, it'll go up more. Yeah, I know. I couldn't believe it either. It's a true story.
Yeah, okay. And then sort of like the... Do you find, I mean, again, one thing I've found over my sort of like, you know, career on sort of small caps, etc., is that it can go sort of like through fallow periods as well as good periods in small caps, and it's sometimes it's a bit of a lonely situation, but you sort of like got to stay faithful and believe and carry on learning in small caps, because there's always a sort of like a stone that you know is unturned or whatever, and you start learning, or there's a black swan or whatever like that. So it's sort of like you know, that resilience and sort of like, do you find that your portfolio can go through periods of sort of idiosyncratic risk and lower performance and then suddenly do a very good couple of years or whatever, which is much, much better than the market? But you've just got to stay faithful that that will happen. It's going to have larger drawdowns and it's part and parcel of small cap investing.
Well, I think the first point is that would be true of small cap investing as a whole. And of course, you know, black swan event like a 9/11, everything's going to go down the swanny. Let's be blunt with that. So one of the key features is to try and make sure that you've got companies which have got good cash flow, good balance sheets, and have the wherewithal to stand them and understand where you're investing in companies which don't, to make sure you've got the capital, if they need extra capital, that you can maintain your pro rata market share, in the pro rata share of the business. But what tends to happen is, you know, everything collapses, but the stock prices collapse, but the businesses don't all perform in line with whatever black swan events that you may think. So, you know, we saw this total collapse in the market earlier this year.
In March,
but actually, the life sciences companies didn't collapse.
Mm.
They did completely the opposite.
Mm.
You know, some of the industrial companies that we saw collapse, like one of our favorites is a company called Avingtrans. You know, went down from sort of 340 to £2 at one stage. But actually, when they came out with their results, they were absolutely in line with expectations. They had not been impacted by any of the shutdowns. And the thing fell to sort of a market cap of 70 million at its low, perhaps even a little less, 65.
Mm.
And you're looking at a business that, you know, came in earning 12.5 million of EBITDA last year. Debt is only £7 million. And they announced that they were going to develop their factory in Luton. And they got planning permission for 1,000 houses. And our property advisors told us that, in their opinion, that site could be worth £17 million. So,
right.
You know...
Yep.
And that sort of company is going to come back. It's a mini Melrose, outstandingly good management. They know exactly what they're doing. It's a buy and it's a buy, build, and sell strategy. They've done it before. We know the two businesses they bought. Well, actually, three businesses they bought. And you know, we think it's extremely undervalued, and are actually buying stock at the moment again.
Yeah, I did notice actually that. You've got a sort of like a cohort of very good directors, sort of that spine across the whole of your businesses. I think the chairman there is Roger McDonald, is it? Or Roger McDowell, yeah, who was, I mean, he did an excellent job with OG and in industrials, etc. And I think...
Well, I was the person who put him on the board of OG.
Oh, did you? Okay. Well, there you go. As in, like, you have your sort of like your key... sort of like directors and managers would be able to then deliver the value that that you see is...
No, well, I mean, he and I went on the board together.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And then... And he, for example, is on the board of Tribal as well.
Oh, right. Okay, well, he's interesting. So I love... So just finally, so along with sort of Tribal and Avintras, is there any other sort of two companies that investors might want to sort of run the slide rule over that you think are very attractive? I mean, obviously, you've got... It's probably about 20, 25 stocks in total.
And one that we kind of like at the moment, been buying recently, is Circassia.
Oh, okay. That's the, it's the diagnostics. Is it asthma diagnostics?
It's asthma diagnostics, that's right. It's got a product called Neox. It's a disaster, actually. It was a Woodford disaster.
And you bought in at a good price. You helped him relieve that situation.
I would say, well, what actually happened was that something we did a few years ago was put a team into a company called Bioquell, led by Ian Johnson.
Yes.
Ian did an outstandingly good job at Bioquell and made us multiples of our money. We are discussing doubles or trebles here, multiples.
Yeah.
And basically, Circassia, since he's been in there, he got out of the AstraZeneca deal.
Yes.
Which has meant that the debt has gone to cash.
Yes.
Niox is a market-leading technology which enables you to determine the inflammation around your asthma. It is a very good business, has very high gross profit margins, nearly 80%. Yes. Very high recurring revenue, about 80%.
Yes.
Now, in the short term, it has been hit because...
The elective surgeries have been pushed to
The elective visits to doctors are down.
Yeah.
But, you know, that ultimately has got to be a short-term thing, because if you don't go to the doctor and you're ill, you're going to have a lot more problems in the future.
Yes.
So he's got a fundamentally good business. He's got very good margins for a diagnostics business. EKS margins, pre the COVID-related income, are only 55%, basically.
Yeah, compared to 80.
Compared to 80.
Yeah.
He's got a lot of work to do to get the thing into shape, but his performance bonus scheme doesn't start till 50p a share, I think, and it might be 60.
Yeah.
And the current stock price is only 24, so...
There's plenty of upside.
Yeah, that's the sort of example of fits all our criteria, good business, good market share, good gross profits, very sticky, and now good management.
Yeah, I had a quick look at that, and I totally agree. I mean, I think it's an outstanding business, and certainly I would concur with... For investors to have a look at Circassia. Is it ticker CIR? Is it? I think that's right.
Yeah.
Well, one thing I did notice was just the sort of cash burn. Is it like? I mean, I know Harwood and I think the lead investor have put another sort of underwritten another $5 million of equity if the company ever needs it at about 25p just under or something. The cash burn is.
The cash burn comes as a result of the catastrophic AstraZeneca deal.
Yes.
Which is now behind them.
Yes.
Now we've got to basically get... This company will be cash positive, I am very sure, very soon.
Wow. Okay. Okay, well, in that case, I would totally agree. I think it's an absolute... I think it's on about 2 to 2.5 times sales, which for a high-quality diagnostics business... is very good value.
Yeah, they're worth 4 times.
Yeah,
but I mean, he can grow this business too. This is fundamentally a growth company.
Yeah,
That's all that's in Circassia now. All the rest of the rubbish has been taken out.
Brilliant. Okay, well, thanks very much, Chris, for your time. That is absolutely excellent insight, and I recommend investors to have a look at your fund. Where would be the best place to contact you if they are interested in investing some of the flagship investment trusts?
Well, look, I mean, anyone wants to give me a call. I'm at Harwood Capital Management. I will be working through this, although, in fact, I'm going on holiday on Saturday. So
obviously, where are you off to?
Off to Switzerland.
Oh, lovely.
So, well... At least you could go there and back without having to be quarantined. So,
okay. Well, thanks very much, Chris, for your time. And as I say, we'll chat again in about a month or a couple of months to see how the investments are progressing.
Thanks so much.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.